In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's podcast. Well, we have a busy show in store, from farmers unhappy with the REP scheme to farmers unhappy with Glanbia. It seemed that the people in charge were feeling the heat this week. But first, with many of us working from home, rural broadband and the curse of dangling dongles out of kitchen windows has never been felt quite as acutely as during the pandemic. It was an issue that was highlighted in Our Rural Future, the government's new five-year plan for rural Ireland, which was launched on Monday. Deputy News Editor Amy Ford had this report from the event in Croke Park.
We want to work with communities, we want to work with people. This is about people, places and possibilities. And now is the time. It's not the time to go back, it's time to look to the future.
That was Minister for Community and Rural Development Heather Humphreys at the launch of the government's new rural policy this week. Our Rural Future contains 150 commitments which will see it invest in remote working, the National Broadband Plan and enhance the wellbeing and quality of life of those living in rural Ireland. Now, while none of the measures for farming in the plan are new, Taoiseach Micheál Martin said that there is an exciting future ahead in terms of adding value to farm enterprises, citing how Teresa Roach of Kylemore Farmhouse Cheese in County Galway has diversified her business.
And we have a range of examples of these all across rural Ireland, where it's not just about the commodity itself, but it's how can we add value in terms of honey, in terms of, you know, in terms of food areas. So Manison does cheese and she also does honey farming as well, and harvesting as well, and there's a range of that going on, and I think that's a key direction of travel.
Next up, Tánaiste Dé Liath Bhreacair said that this is an era of opportunity for rural Ireland.
Isn't just about people moving to rural Ireland, it's also about people being able to spend more time there. So we've huge numbers of people living in rural Ireland who commute into Dublin and Cork and Galway and Limerick, but if they were able to spend more time working from home, working from their local village or small town, they'll spend more money locally in shops and in businesses in that small town and small village. So it's not just about people relocating to rural Ireland, which it is about, but it's also about people who already live in rural Ireland, instead of commuting, being able to spend more time locally and more money locally, which therefore benefits the local economy. But I think we're heading into an era of opportunity for rural Ireland, and it really is four things. It's green energy, it's food production and forestry, it's modern tourism, and it's also digital. So we know about the energy revolution that's about to start in Ireland and how much that's going to happen in rural areas rather than urban areas. We know how food production is changing, that people genuinely want to buy products that are sustainably produced, and that's something that we can do in Ireland, more so than other countries. When it comes to tourism, you know, I think the tourism of the future is going to be fewer city breaks, and more people taking longer breaks and staying in a country they visit for a week or two. And that's where rural tourism and agritourism and greenways really come to their fore. And then finally, on the digital side, the National Broadband Plan, ensuring that we're one of the first countries in the world, and we will be one of the first countries in the world, to connect almost every home, farm and business to high-speed broadband. And that enables remote working.
On broadband, Minister for Climate and Communications Eamon Ryan said that the government plans to connect 70,000 homes under the National Broadband Plan by the end of the year. He also said that he hopes to accelerate the rollout of the plan.
The first key target was always those broadband connection points. And as I said earlier, there are 290 of them up and running, and they're critical to meet the enterprise objectives and community development objectives mentioned earlier. It's 196,000 houses surveyed, and that's what we always had to do first to measure, well, how exactly could you get it to the house? What's the right network design to do? It is taking time. It's only a small number of houses which are up and running yet, but that was always the case. I expect by the end of the year, it'll be something like 70,000 houses will be first connected. And as I said, we're looking to accelerate then what was a seven-year programme to see can we do that in a quicker time frame because of the urgency of this from what we've seen from the COVID approach.
Finally, Minister Humphrey summed up the plan by liking it to buying a new car and the car dealer filling up the tank for you before you leave the garage.
Let's put it this way. If you want to move to rural Ireland, we want to help you. You know, if you buy a new car, sometimes when you're leaving the garage man will say, I'll fill up that tank for you and we fill it full of fuel. That's to help you get you on your way. This is what this relocation grant is about. It's about helping you to make that move to rural Ireland, and it shows government's intent to help you do that.
Amy Ford there with that report. Well, it was once said that a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Unfortunately for the Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConlogue, that was not the mood music coming from a large part of the farm community when it comes to the new REPS or Agri-Environmental Scheme. Farmers seem to be of the opinion that the old REP scheme was an awful lot sweeter, as they told him during an IFA AGM on Monday.
I wouldn't insult REPS to call it a REP scheme, because I was in REPS for 20 years, 1, 2, 3 and 4, and it was a wonderful scheme, and there was money at the end of the day out of it. People was getting, we have designated land, Charlie. We have a lot of designated land. There's no recognition for our designated land anymore in the scheme. We have restrictions because of them designations.
You mentioned that you were disappointed in the pilot scheme. Well, listen, I think when you look at the average payments, say, under, you know, the later REP schemes and also the West and Glass, Eddie, this which is only a pilot, service and that, it's only the pilot scheme, it's expected to be a higher average payment. And it's on 10 hectares of land. So as I said in my previous contribution, you know, if it's four, and there will be some advisor costs, that's absolutely will be the case for the administration of it and being results based. But if you take it that it's potentially, if the average payment of 4,700 on 10 hectares, that's potentially 470 per hectare. If you add your 260, if you're on the average DPS, that's 530, that's 730, and you add 100 and something in the ANC, that's over €800 per hectare payments in your first 10 hectares. And I think that's a very strong starting point. I do hope we can get the approval at European level now for it. But I think that would certainly, before sheep or a lamb or a cow or a calf put into that 10 hectares, that you would, that would be your starting point. And I think that would be quite a good outcome and quite a welcome outcome. Overall, if we can get it approved, we're still waiting the answer on that. So, okay, thanks.
Am I there now?
Okay, John.
Am I there now?
You're there now.
Sorry, I had to come in late to the meeting. We had to value cows for TV, so I couldn't come any sooner. And that is my first point. TB, and I think both the IFA and the department are missing the point entirely. We've lost a lot of cows in this area. There's been several herds taken out of it entirely, mainly down, what we're saying is down to the road. The new M4 has gone through here, and I think there's not one herd that hasn't been touched by TB since the road is the first sod was turned. My other point is there to the Minister. You mentioned there several times about the money, and you added up the money as what farmers are getting. Apologies if I sound rude, but that's nonsense. Most of those schemes come with demands that we have to spend money to, and this new scheme will have demands that we will have to spend money or forego money by reducing stocking rates or whatever. So therefore, adding up that money is nonsense. And you mentioned it twice there in the time. And I think it's very disingenuous and a massive misunderstanding of how a farm actually works. Thank you.
And John, then in relation to TV, and I'm sorry to hear about the challenges you had and the stress and the loss that has come with that. And I take on board the points that you're making and the need for a scientific approach to what we're doing. It's something that I put a lot of effort into being appointed minister to try and get a new TB strategy agreed and a new TB forum operational with working groups and working streams as part of that, and something that IFA are very much part of in terms of all three working groups that are there. And I put out that your representative and representatives on the forums and on the working groups would be glad to take on board your views and ensure that they're fed in, because it is something we have to make progress in. Over the last year to 18 months, we've seen the number of reactor farms grow from 3.5% to 4.5%, which is a massive increase and really, really concerning direction of travel, and we have to get on top of that and bring it down. And ultimately, as well, genuinely work towards the eradication, which was the initial objective, but that's not where it's been going recently. And the key to that is adopting a scientific approach in every way that we can, and your input in regard to that would be welcome, John. And Michael, finally, in relation to results-based schemes, and you mentioned the potential that's there in the northwest, and the carbon potential of it as well. And I would make the point, I do think there's tremendous value, and I was very keen in relation to the results-based pilot scheme we're putting together to try and ensure that it'd be one that would be worthwhile for farmers and beneficial to farmers. And while there will be some costs included, it will be, most of the costs will be in an income foregone.
The Minister for Agriculture there, and there is more news from that AGM in Sligo in the paper and online this week. Now, part of the idea behind that new REP scheme is to help encourage farmers to enlist in measures to help the environment. Another way the department and the EU is hoping to encourage farmers to become more environmentally friendly is to get them to switch to organic farming. The EU Commission has big plans to ensure that 25% of land across the EU is farmed organically by 2030. But last week, at a press conference in Brussels, the Commissioner for Agriculture, Janusz Wojciechowski, highlighted some countries' current low-performing status on organics, including Ireland, where just 2% of land is certified organic.
I'm happy that in Ireland there is Irish farmers that are interested to be organic, because I said before that Ireland is one of the member states in which the development of the organic farming is very slow and very small. But what are the instruments for to develop the demand for the consumption of the organic products? I said before that this is for example, the green public organic public procurement that's in the supply to the public consumption, to the schools, to the hospitals, for the public consumer. Organic food can be treated in privileged way, that in this procurement can be limited only for the organic production. This is one of the possibilities, that creating of the demand for the organic consumption is very important part of this action plan. But the second question is very important, that we encourage the member states to adopt their own organic farming action plan, national organic farming action plan, because as I said before, there are big differences across the member states, and it should be the different action in Ireland, in Poland, in the Netherlands, in the countries in which there, we have the only 3%, about the 3% of the land under organic, and different situation is Austria and Sweden, like the, where is the about the 25 or 20% area under organic farming. This is, we need individual approach.
The EU Commissioner for Agriculture there. Stay tuned because we'll be back after this with Glanbia analysis.
New payment for suckler farmers proposed. For more in your Farmers Journal, here's Paul Mooney.
We revealed secret department talks on new cap payments for carbon neutral suckler farms. As farm payments move from eastern to western counties, find out if you stand to gain or lose on the next cap. Meat factories are under more pressure as UK market sets new record. And how many armchair farmers are in Ireland? We crunch the numbers.
Plus, our focus looks at spring AI, only inside this week's Irish Farmers Journal, on sale now.
Now, there was considerable talk in farm circles last week following on from the Irish Farmers Journal webinar with Glanbia on their plans for peak milk supply. Deputy Editor Jack Kennedy spoke to Dairy Editor Aidan Brennan about the recent changes and what impact, if any, they will have.
Jack Kennedy, Farmers Journal, talking to Aidan Brennan, Dairy Editor of the Farmers Journal, about the new peak supply management policy introduced at Glanbia. Aidan, we covered this in depth last week, I suppose, in terms of the new rules in terms of peak supply management at Glanbia. Maybe bring us up to speed in terms of what has happened this week in terms of meetings and webinars and maybe changes to what we had last week.
Yeah, Jack, I suppose on the back of a good bit of farmer anger over the new rules and the decisions that have been made by the board, I suppose there was a board meeting on Monday, and there was also a council meeting, a meeting of the Council of Glanbia, where they discussed the new rules, and I suppose a couple of different tweaks were added to them, you know, maybe to soften the blow for some people. But look, at the end of the day, the brunt of the measures are still there. I mean, and the issues that Glanbia have is that they can't process, as they say, they can't process all the milk that's going to come along the line if there's unfettered expansion. So they put a stop to that. The issue is at peak, and they put a stop to the freedom, I suppose, to produce as much milk as they want at peak. So they're limiting farmers now to between 10% compound growth and 2.5% compound growth, or zero compound growth in some instances if your supply curve is higher than the Glanbia average.
And I mean, this 10% piece, is that's new this week, we'll say, is it, in terms of what change came in from last week?
Yeah, so that's a new measure. I mean, and it's on the back of the fact that existing dairy farmers who were maybe supplying less than 550,000 litres were limited to 5% compound annual growth, whereas a new entrant could come in who was never a milk supplier previously and supply up to 550,000 litres or more, but they're capped at that for their peak supply. So I suppose this new category was introduced to allow farmers that are existing suppliers but are you know, smaller than average, so milking, you know, less than 80 cows, can now expand about 10% per year, which is a little bit of a bonus for them, for those who want to expand.
Mm. So, I mean, as you say, I mean, they're all tweaks, but I mean, the main brunt of the scheme is still the same. The peak management is capped, we'll say. The peak supply over those 3 months, April, May and June, is capped, and just different thresholds, as you said, depending on your category of supplier, what size of category you are. So, I mean, in terms of, I suppose, the reserve pool that they talked about, was there any more details on terms of the reserve pool? Because this potentially could kind of be for maybe those that have invested a lot on farm, or those that have maybe just started milking, like this reserve pool could potentially give them some freedom to produce a little bit more. Any more details on that?
Yeah, so the reserve pool was the initial expectation was that retiring farmers, so farmers that were existing dairy farmers that would retire, would be getting up to 15,000 per year for five years in order to encourage them to retire. But the feeling is that won't be enough. You know, those farmers won't be enough to fill the supply or the demand that's there for this reserve pool. So they've introduced a new measure, which is called this voluntary reduction scheme, which will pay farmers 10 cents a litre for every litre that they don't produce during the peak months. So these farmers don't necessarily need to retire. They just need to commit to reduce their peak supply by at least 10% over the next 3 years. Now, it'll be interesting to see whether or not there'll be more of an uptake of that.
And so just to be clear on that then, so if during that peak volume period there was a farm producing 400,000 litres, they said they'd drop it to 380 or less or whatever, but let's say 380. So on the difference, on the 20,000 litres, they get a 10 cent per litre top up on those 20,000 litres that they don't supply over those 3 months.
Yes, correct, Jack, but I think you need to commit to at least a 10% reduction.
Okay.
In order to avail of the scheme.
So that would effectively mean they'd have to, like, they need to kind of say they're going to produce 360 or less over that 3 month period rather than the 400,000 litres. And then they'd get the 10 cents a litre top up on top of the 40,000 litres.
Exactly. And they also need to commit to producing milk again during later in the year. So it's not a retirement scheme. It needs to differentiate itself from the retirement scheme. So these farmers should still be in milk production, but just producing less.
Okay. The difficult one to manage, I'd say, Aidan, in terms of kind of, you know, at farm level, in terms of making it practical, is it, you know, to kind of reduce the supply over, unless the cow, unless you have less cows, like, you know what I mean, really, to be able to reduce the peak and continue later on in the year, like, it's probably, it's a difficult
one. Yeah, Jack, the only thing I can see this has been any use for is maybe farmers that were contemplating retiring anyway, but maybe not so sure about it, but instead then they might reduce their numbers. They might still be milking cows, but they might reduce their numbers, or, you know, potentially they might decide to go once a day milking or something to that effect anyway, you know, and this might just be a little bit of a boost. From, like, 10 cents a litre in every litre you don't produce, it's a nice little bonus for them in order to do it. Like, I mean, that's a lot of the profit that they'd be making anyway, even by producing the milk. So it's nice for in that regard, but I suppose, you know, again, I mean, the existing suppliers that are funding this scheme, well, sorry, it's been funded through the Co-op, so the Co-op is the Glenbeg Co-op is paying for this in its entirety, but that's still effectively farmers' money. Like, they could be using that to support milk price or just give them a dividend, you know?
Yeah, so you're recycling money, as you say, and this is just another cohort that's getting it to kind of fix the problem or to try and fix the problem. There was no more details on the kind of judicial review of the kind of, I mean, effectively, this is the core of the problem. There's a judicial review of the planning approval for the new facility, new cheese facility at Bellevue, and that's ongoing, so hence the delay and hence the processing capacity limited. There was no more details on that this week.
So, and Glenbeg held their own webinar on Tuesday, and look, it wasn't discussed, and their you know, the management and board chairman and all the rest, they're all very tight-lipped on it, because effectively, Jack, the judge is making the decision now in his, you know, his or her own head as to whether or not to approve the Ambler Pleanála decision to grant the planning permission. And that's kind of, so they're very tight-lipped because of that case is still ongoing. So we don't know any more about that. And I mean, the expectation is that if it's approved, hopefully by July, they can get to go ahead to go building, and they should have it in by the end of 2024, which would, you know, what Glenbeg is saying is it'll allow, you know, that'll then terminate these arrangements. And if, God forbid, something doesn't go their way, if the court case doesn't go their way or if it's appealed, that will hold it up again. And so, I mean, while they talk about these measures being temporary, the fear is that they could become, you know, a long-term temporary.
Yeah, exactly. Aidan, this story is going to run and run. I think we haven't heard the end of it just yet. I mean, I know that Glenbeg are planning to get letters out in terms of what the peak allocations are to suppliers next week. So, I mean, that'll be another step in the journey, and farmers will see exactly at first hand what their allocation is and what they have to kind of keep under, I suppose, for the coming years. So, look, I'm sure we'll talk on this again. Thanks for that.
Jack Kennedy and Aidan Brennan there. It was also an issue that came up in political circles when South Tipperary Senator Garrett Ahern raised the issue of what are effectively a new quota in the Glenbeg region in the Shannon this week during a debate about Brexit with the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney.
This week we had an announcement with Glenbeg that there's going to be a temporary cap on their milk supply, and this is going to cause restrictions over a three-month period every year in April, May and June. Of people's milk supply, and that's a for all intents and purposes for dairy farmers, that's quotas being brought back in a certain way. And I just was interested to get the minister's perspective, because we've been seen as a party and as a government over the last 10 years who've been promoting rural Ireland, promoting agriculture, promoting the dairy sector to expand and enhance, and now we have a situation where a body on Taoiseach who, you know, Ireland don't have a democratic mandate, are essentially attacking a sector in rural Ireland of the dairy industry with no mandate whatsoever. And when we're trying to encourage people, and certainly on a day when we've launched a rural strategy for Ireland over the next number of years, that we now have a situation where this sector is effectively being hamstrung by decisions made by Antashka. And I think just from your own perspective, I'd love to hear your views on it and your thoughts on it.
Senator Garrett Ahern there. Now, as we all know, the UK is Ireland's most important beef market, and Brexit continues to be a major concern for exporters on both sides of the Irish Sea. Nick Allen, Chief Executive of British Meat Processors Association, that represents British meat factories, explained to Feilim O'Neill the extra hurdles exporters have to clear since Brexit came into effect at the start of the year.
So I'm joined by Nick Allen, the Chief Executive of the British Meat Exporters Association, BMPA, who would have a similar role for the British meat industry that Meat Industry Ireland has for the Irish meat factories. Nick, thank you for speaking to the Irish Farmers Journal. It's clear from your publication that you released last week, exporting has become something of a nightmare for your members. Can you take me through that, please, simply? What is the big problem now compared to doing business last year?
Well, there are about, nearly 30 steps, different things that we have to do compared to last year. And what we're finding is that initially there were teething problems with all of this. And a lot of problems like the border control posts in Europe didn't actually have the same sort of guidelines as we had. So the first couple of months were a nightmare in terms of actually sorting out those teething problems. But we've come out with this report now, because we feel like we've got over those teething problems and we can now see what we're faced with, you know, for the future. And these, you know, 26 steps or whatever it is, you know, that you have to sort of do along the way, have all added cost, you know, to the whole system, really. And that's a cost that we're left with. It doesn't matter how good we get at filling in these forms and how good we sort of start to do things. This is the legacy, you know, that we're going to be left with. And it's a cost in terms of a financial cost, in terms of paying for export health certificates, paying for our border control agents, you know, to help us at the ports. But it's also a cost in delays. We're not getting through the ports sort of as quickly as we should be. And we can't see that we're ever going to be. And
Have you any estimate of how much extra time delay has been added because of this process?
You have to, you can get some, if you're lucky, you can you can only build in half a day. But that's if you're lucky, you can't count on that. So that's the trouble. If you're one of the 15% of lorries that sort of gets pulled up at the border control post and taken to one side, you can be there for a day, day and a half if you're unlucky. So it's the unpredictability of it as well, you know. So it's like a bit of a lottery.
Feilim O'Neill there. And there's a longer version of that podcast online if you're interested. That's the show finished for this week. Thank you very much for tuning in. And remember, you can find lots more on our website. Or if you have any suggestions or things that you think we should be doing in the podcast, you can email podcast@farmersjournal.ie. I'm Hannah Quinn Mulligan, and the sound engineer was Claire Nash.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.